are diving right in today. We're going to be looking at a pretty fascinating area where campaign finance regulations and free speech kind of bump up against each other, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really tricky area.
We're focusing on this Supreme Court case, Randall v. Sorrell, decided back in 2006. And it's really all about how we try to balance those two really important principles. So, you know, if you're interested in how campaigns are funded and what limits there are or should be on that funding, well, this is definitely the deep dive for you.
This one's a big one.
Yeah, and to really, like, grasp all the ins and outs of Randall, we kind of got to go back a bit, right? Back to 1976 and the landmark case of Buckley v. Valeo. That's where the Supreme Court really first dug into this whole tension, you know, between the government wanting to prevent corruption, even just the appearance of it, and the First Amendment.
Right, the right to free speech and association, which Buckley said definitely applies to spending money in political campaigns.
Exactly. So Randall kind of picks up where Buckley left off, right? It revisits this whole balance.
Yeah.
But to understand Randall, you got to know about the law that was being challenged. We're talking about Vermont Act 64 from 1997.
Oh, yeah. Act 64, that was pretty ambitious.
It really was. It put in place some seriously strict limits on two main things. How much candidates for state office could spend on their campaigns and how much individuals, organizations, even political parties could contribute to those campaigns.
So caps on expenditures and contributions, both. Pretty unusual for a state law.
Yeah, and these weren't like tiny symbolic limits. The expenditure caps, depending on the office, could be as low as like $200 or $400 per election cycle.
Though, to be fair, they were adjusted for inflation.
True, true. But still, that's not a lot of money to run a campaign.
No, not at all. And the contribution limits were really low, too. And they applied across the board, like you said, to individuals, political action committees, everyone. So Vermont was going for a really comprehensive approach here, which is, I think, part of what got the Supreme Court's attention.
Makes sense. So unsurprisingly, a law this restrictive got some pushback. Candidates, voters, political parties, they all started saying, hey, wait a minute, these limits are stepping all over our First Amendment rights. And that's what brings us to the big legal questions the Supreme Court had to wrestle with in Randall.
Right. And the first big question was, do these expenditure limits that Vermont put in place violate the First Amendment, especially considering what Buckley had already said about this?
Yeah, because Buckley was pretty clear that the government can't really limit how much a candidate or their supporters can spend independently to get them elected. So what did the Randall Court do? Did they stick with Buckley?
They did. They basically reaffirmed that core principle from Buckley. The court said, look, spending money in a political campaign, that's a form of political speech. And the First Amendment protects that. So these spending limits, they're a no-go.
Okay, that explains why some campaigns seem to have almost unlimited resources.
Yeah, pretty much. As long as the spending is, like, truly independent from the candidate's control, the government can't really put a cap on it.
But I thought some of the justices in Randall actually wanted to revisit Buckley.
Oh, they did. The dissenters, led by Justice Stevens, they argued that Buckley should be looked at again. They thought these expenditure limits could be justified because the state has a huge interest in preventing corruption, or at least the appearance of corruption. Plus, they thought these limits could level the playing field so candidates with a ton of money or backing from wealthy groups don't drown everyone else out.
They had a point there.
They did. They also said limiting spending could reduce the pressure on candidates to, you know, constantly be fundraising.
So why doesn't the majority of the court buy those arguments?
Well, the majority said those were basically the same arguments that were already considered and rejected in Buckley. They didn't think that, you know, reducing fundraising time, even if it's a good idea, was a strong enough reason to restrict political speech.
Interesting. But the court did approach the contribution limits differently, right?
Exactly. They said, look, limits on contributions, they do involve the First Amendment, for sure, because they limit who you can support and how much. But they're not as big of a threat to free speech as limits on how much a campaign can spend overall.
Okay, but then they said Vermont's contribution limits were unconstitutionally low. So which is it?
Well, it's a balancing act, right? The court recognized that contribution limits can't be so low that they basically make it impossible to run a campaign. You know, imagine if the limit was so low a candidate could barely afford to print flyers or hold a small event.
Right, that wouldn't be fair to candidates who don't have a lot of personal wealth or connections to wealthy donors.
Yeah.
So what made Vermont's limits unconstitutionally low? I remember there were five key factors the court pointed out.
Yeah, let's go through those. First, Vermont's limits were the lowest in the nation. That was a big red flag right off the bat.
Makes sense. So what was the second factor?
Second, the limits applied to all donors equally. It didn't matter if you were an individual giving a small amount or a huge organization with a lot of potential influence. Same limit for everyone.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like the best way to target corruption.
Nope. The third factor was that the limits weren't adjusted for inflation. So over time, they became even more restrictive.
Ah, yeah. Inflation eats away at everything.
It really does. Fourth, those same low limits applied to political parties, too.
Mm-hmm.
And parties play a big role in elections, you know, getting people organized, supporting candidates. So these limits could really hurt their ability to do that.
Right. Parties are kind of the backbone of the whole system in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And what was that fifth factor, the one about volunteers?
Right. So this one was kind of strange. The law actually counted some volunteer expenses as contributions. Like if someone used their own car to drive voters to the polls, the gas and mileage could count towards the campaign's limit.
Wow, that seems like it would discourage people from volunteering, especially for campaigns that don't have a lot of money.
Exactly. And the court was worried about that. They thought it could really hurt grassroots efforts.
So all those factors together basically created a situation where it would be super hard to run a successful campaign, especially for challengers going up against incumbents.
Right. The court said it could stifle political participation and give incumbents, who already have advantages like name recognition, an even bigger edge.
So the court's main point was that, yes, preventing corruption is important, but Vermont's contribution limits went too far. They restricted free speech too much and could actually harm democracy.
Exactly. They weren't narrowly tailored enough to achieve that goal without causing too much damage.
Now, I know there were some interesting concurring and dissenting opinions in Randall. Can you tell us a little about those?
Sure. So, Justices Thomas and Scalia, they agreed with the outcome, but they actually thought Buckley was wrong in the first place. They thought all campaign finance limits on both spending and contributions should be subject to strict scrutiny, which is the toughest standard of review.
So they'd probably strike down most, if not all, campaign finance regulations.
Probably. Justice Alito, joined by Justice Kennedy, they agreed with striking down Vermont's law, but they wanted to stick closer to Buckley, even if they didn't agree with all of its reasoning.
And the dissenters.
Justice Stevens, he wrote a pretty strong dissent. He wanted the court to overturn Buckley's distinction between expenditure limits and contribution limits. He thought expenditure limits were totally fine and a good way to prevent corruption and level the playing field.
So he was okay with limiting how much campaigns could spend overall.
Yeah. Justice Souter also dissented. He thought Vermont's contribution limits were fine and that the state had good reasons for them, like reducing the time candidates spend fundraising.
Wow. So even on the Supreme Court, there's no easy answer to this stuff. It's really complicated.
Absolutely. And Randall really highlights that ongoing debate, you know, the lack of consensus on how to balance free speech and preventing corruption.
So what's the big takeaway from Randall? What does it tell us about campaign finance law today?
Well, the biggest thing is that it reaffirmed Buckley. So limits on independent campaign spending are, for the most part, unconstitutional.
Okay, but it also sets some rules for contribution limits.
Right. It's in those limits can be struck down, too, if they're so low they prevent candidates from running a viable campaign. It's about finding that balance.
So what are the questions courts should ask when they're looking at contribution limits now?
They need to ask, are these limits so low they make it impossible for candidates to get their message out and raise enough money? Do they give incumbents an unfair advantage? And do they stop political parties from doing their jobs?
Those are all really important considerations.
They are. Randall basically gave courts a roadmap for how to think about these cases.
Well, this has been a super interesting discussion. We've really gotten into the weeds on Randall v. Sorrell and the whole debate about money in politics.
Definitely a lot to unpack there.
It is. And as we wrap up this deep dive, here's something for all of you listening to think about. Given all this debate about money in politics, how do you think we should balance free speech rights and the need to prevent corruption when we're making campaign finance rules?
It's a tough question.
And what about really low contribution limits? Do you think they could hurt grassroots movements or make it harder for new voices to be heard in politics? These are questions worth pondering as we continue to grapple with this complex issue.
I think that's a great point to end on. Thanks for having me.
Of course, it was great having you on. And to everyone listening, thanks for joining us for another deep dive. Until next time.